Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Thursday, October 16th. I'm Ray Graff. It's gardening today. And we welcome Dale Isla Riggs of the Berry Patch, Bob Graves of Fatigan's Nursery, Fred Breglia of Landis Arboretum, and Greg Ward from Ward's Nursery. Give us a call if you have a gardening question. 800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. Greg wasn't here last time, so this time we gave him the very largest chair we could find. His head is scraping on the ceiling right now. You can email your question to voxpop@wamc.org if you wish, but you can call 800-348-2551. Gardening. Beautiful day today to talk about digging in the dirt, and we will do so after the news. Hello again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. The gardeners are back. They're ready to take your calls. Dale Isla Riggs is the owner and operator of the Berry Patch in Steventown, New York. Greg Ward is from Ward's Nursery, a gardening destination in Great Barrington, Massachusetts. Fred Breglia is from he's from Landis Arboretum. The other guy's from Fatigan's. The Landis Arboretum's in Esperance, New York. Bob Graves is the co-owner of Fatigan's Nursery in Latham, New York. I've gotten this straightened out now. They've only been on the show for 27 years. The number here is 800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. If you have a garden, lawn, tree question, whatever, 800-348-2551 or email voxpop@wamc.org. Bob Graves, how are things over at the Landis Arboretum?
Well, last time I was there, it looked great.
Yeah. Did Fred put you to work over there? Hey, how are things?
He showed me around.
How are things at Fatigan's?
We're doing great. We're in the middle of construction. We're putting up a new 10,000-square-foot greenhouse this fall.
Okay. What do you plan to put in there?
Flowers.
Just, it's going to be warm. It's not one of those. Dale Isla, you have cold greenhouses, right?
We have three unheated greenhouses and one heated greenhouse.
Aha. Okay, and these will be heated at Fatigan's.
This is going to be a big glass greenhouse.
Nice, man. Yeah.
Wow, nice.
Greg Ward, great to have you back. How are things at Ward's Nursery?
Great, we have greenhouses.
Hang on, stand by. We're going to turn his mic on. He's on mic number four there, Michael.
See, I haven't been here in a while.
There we go. I see they forgot all about you.
I know.
So how are things over at Ward's?
Really, really good. It's amazing time. We're getting rain, and so that is sort of putting out of our heads that we have to worry about anything but what fun parts of gardening there are. So planting now is really good, certainly cleaning up the garden. There's the to cut back or not to cut back debate these days, because if you're planting a lot of natives, you know, those stems can really house some wintering pollinators, you know, some larvae or egg masses. So do you want to cut back everything at the same time? You want to sort of make room for your daffodil or tulip bulbs you're going to put in. You want to kind of open it up because, you know, the possibility of voles moving into the garden are always out there.
Oh, yeah.
So a little bit of both is what I tend to recommend. And then there's, of course, what we were talking about before. There's the planting of the garlic.
The planting of the garlic. Yeah, there was quite a discussion about that. I must confess I sort of dozed during part of it. But you guys had a great we'll talk about garlic later on today. Fred Breglia, you were the main questioner about the garlic. How are things over at the Landis Arboretum?
You know, we're doing good. We're we got the weather that we were looking for, the moisture and the cooler temperatures. So we've been planting a lot of plants, a lot of trees. We took down a bunch of trees this summer when it was real dry so we can get into some of the areas. Most of them were diseased conifers, white spruce and Colorado spruce. So we took a lot of things down, and now we're putting a lot of plants in the ground. We probably planted 60 trees in the last 2 days, maybe.
Are you doing B&B, container, or bare root?
They're all things that we grew ourselves and almost all containerized plants. Short-term containerized plants, so nothing that's been in container.
So they're going to transplant really well this time of year.
They're transplanting really well. Yeah. Shallow holes, you know, they're not going any deeper than they need to. So real shallow holes, but wide. Yep. And, we're just making a lot of progress. So we're psyched. We're planting a lot of trees.
Cool. Dale Isla Riggs, how are things? You're winding down at the Berry Patch, right?
We are slowing down. I won't say we're winding down.
Okay.
We actually tend to harvest strawberries till about the end of November and tomatoes till the end of November.
Tomatoes? Oh, they have to be in one of those hothouses, right?
Yes, all of these things are. We had a wonderful 24-degree freeze last week.
Wow.
And 27-degree freeze this
Wowzers.
Morning. So everything outside is done.
Okay.
Even the watermelons that I had covered didn't make it through the 24 degrees. But
wow, 24 is cold.
Yeah,
it is.
We were down to 27 last week.
Yeah.
You brought strawberries.
I did bring strawberries. There's our usual variety that we grow, which is called Seascape.
Lovely. And then, why do they call them Seascape?
You'd have to ask the breeder.
Okay.
They're from California, so they probably...
Greg's got a witty idea.
I was trying, but I...
No, you didn't come. You know, I was trying to read your expression. I thought you had a good one.
As soon as you mentioned Seascape and why, I went, well, it's because when you pick the strawberries, you feel like you're just strolling along the sea.
Yeah.
I don't feel like that, do you? Why?
Have you ever picked strawberries?
No, I haven't.
Well, there you go.
Okay, fine.
I'm guessing that the breeder, the nursery where these were developed, probably had a nice view of the ocean.
Ah, okay.
Yeah.
And then the other one is it got a really classy name, NY17-92.
Yeah, and that is an advanced selection from the Cornell breeding program that they asked me to test, and I just think they are so cool because of these really funky. The cap on a strawberry is called the calyx, and these are giant calyxes that look like they could take flight.
Yeah, it does look like they could fly.
Do you think that's why they bred them for the calyx?
Can you make salads out of these, Fred? You eat almost anything.
I don't think you would eat those. No.
Now, look at this one. It's the size of a softball.
Yeah,
this
that
is
berry
a massive.
Looks good.
New York 1792, obviously irradiated, eh?
Huge. Never know.
Godzilla size.
Certainly not in our greenhouse. It wasn't.
Oh, I'm only kidding, Dale Isla. And then the little punky ones that are very pale. What's up with that?
Yeah, this is also from the Cornell breeder, and he called them a pineberry type
Look
of strawberry.
That.
They're cool.
So they're albino. They never get red. And I had to call him up and say, how do I know when to pick them?
Yeah. Right.
And he said, when they're getting a little bit of a blush on them.
Okay.
So I know a few years ago I used to sell some unripe strawberries to some chefs and they would pickle them.
Oh.
So I don't know if that's what these are all about or if they're just decorative or what.
Now, maybe you can't answer this, but why would a chef want to pickle an unripened strawberry?
You will need to ask your Food Friday folks.
That's coming up. That's right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Segue into the next show.
Okay. Well, let's get through this one first. Carrie in Durham says, I have several lilacs that got the fungus this year. Two of them are now flowering, I assume due to stress. Weird thing is that they both have white flowers. One of them usually has purple flowers. The other one normally has white ones. What's up with that? And that's from Carrie in Durham.
Yeah, we're seeing that a lot this year with the lilac blight. All of the leaves kind of basically fell off. And lilacs aren't usually used to setting out additional growth for that year. So once they put it out, they're kind of done. And waiting for next year, but they basically think it's next year.
Okay.
Those plants think it's spring.
And they're okay. Confused. There's no problem.
Yeah.
They'll be fine.
I was looking around a bit. So that this leaf blight that's happening is this Septoria fungus that is really predominant now. It's like almost everybody has it, but you do notice it mostly on older hedges, older clumps. And so I was just doing a little checking, and there are certainly fungicides we've mentioned before that you can use. But cleaning up the leaves, as we mentioned before. And then a big thing is thinning the plant, doing some reduction pruning of the bigger wood so that you get lots of room, lots of light, so hopefully they'll dry out. Also, hope for less humid summers.
Okay. Deb writes in, last spring you mentioned a mini cucumber called mouse melon. I think it was one of the guests, maybe Dale Isla, said that they would have plants available. The others were very positive about it being the newest thing. But I haven't heard a word since. What happened? I don't remember mouse melon coming up.
We didn't have mouse melon, but we did have a, what was the name of it? Quick Snack.
That's what it was. Yeah,
that was a miniature cucumber, and they were great. Everyone that had them this year, they were a cucumber that you could keep in a pot. And everyone that I've talked to that had them thought they were great, and they were producing all summer long.
No, beautiful.
And you'll have those again next year?
I wonder how you got Quick Snack into mouse melon. That is what I find interesting here. Is there a mouse melon of any kind?
There is a mouse melon, but I think it's
Not a cucumber.
Right.
No, not a cucumber.
Probably a melon, I'm thinking.
Probably
yeah?
a melon.
Yeah. All right, now here's a long email. We'll try to keep the answer fairly short as we're coming up against a break. Lydia writes in, last spring we contracted with a local nursery to address issues with the lawn for our corner lot. One, remove stumps. Two, grade the lot. Three, plant two trees. Four, create a lawn. Steps one through three were completed, and we have no complaints. However, the topsoil and seeding failed almost completely. There is an infestation of crabgrass in most of the areas they addressed. A clear line between this area and the original lawn really makes it look even more absurd. Where there is no crabgrass, there's just dirt. They planted in June, and although it was watered twice a day via automatic sprinkler, they checked the placement of the sprinklers to assure coverage. I'm sure the heat defeated any grass that germinated. Nursery came back overseeded. Only a few blades came up through the crabgrass. The nursery has come back a couple of times. What should we expect the nursery to do in the spring? We paid a lot. The lawn portion was about half the cost. Wow, it sounds like a legal matter.
Well, you know, your first question is, in my mind, is what's the soil like? You know, you need a soil test. You need to get some idea of the quality of the topsoil. A lot of times when soil's brought in, it's really not great.
No.
And a lot of times the pH is up close to 8, which is not what you want. If they've got lawn sprinklers and they plant grass seed, they should be able to grow grass.
So there's something with the soil, you think?
So probably pH.
I'm worried about the soil, and I don't think I'd wait till spring to reseed. I think I'd do it right now.
You know, so the crabgrass is dying now. These frosts, these lovely 27, 24s, that kills the crabgrass. But if they've been there for a while, the plants, they drop a whole bunch of seed.
Yeah.
So by getting your perennial seed, the seeds you want, down now, it usually will germinate at the same time, if not a little before, hopefully, and you'll have some competition, and you can kind of work on the crabgrass part a little bit later in the season.
Take care of the crabgrass next spring.
Yep.
With a pre-emergent, because you're not going to do anything about it now.
All right, let's take a break here. It's Gardening Today with Bob Graves, Fred Breglia, Greg Ward, and Dale Isla Riggs. The number is 800-348-2551. Back with your calls in a moment. Fox Pop on WAMC, Ray Graff with you. It's the Gardening Show with Dale Isla Riggs, Fred Breglia, Greg Ward, and Bob Graves. And I tell you what, let's go to the phones. Susan is in Southampton, Massachusetts. Susan, you're on. No, Susan, is it potted up there, Daddy-O?
Spring.
Oh, there you are.
I don't know.
Oh, hang on, Susan.
We
missed the beginning of that. Could you try it again?
Okay, I have a Caryopteris and a lavender that I want to move in the spring. Do I move them and then cut them back? Do I cut them back before I move them? I don't want to shock them too hard. And the second question is, any suggestions to getting the deer to stop eating my oak leaf hydrangea?
Okay.
I think on the moving thing, if you can wait till spring, then that would be ideal. And you wouldn't cut either of them back now, or actually in the spring, until you see some new growth. So move them in April, take a look at them in May, and maybe the 1st of June. If there's any dead wood on the Caryopteris, you could remove that. Otherwise, it'll be by itself. And the lavender, if they're older and kind of woody looking, again, waiting for some new growth and then reducing them usually gives you a better shape.
Okay. Yep.
And then in terms of your deer problem, you have a few options. You could try repellents. Repellents do work. There are some concoctions. I know one of them we put on our website under facts or whatever at landisarboretum.org. And it's a concoction of rotted eggs and some cayenne pepper and some
delicious lemon.
So that works. You do have to reapply it for it to be effective. In the past, I have used a malorganite fertilizer, which has had some luck with deterring deer and otherwise deer fencing. To keep them from going. Hydrangeas, a lot of times, you know, it never used to be that bad of a problem in terms of deer browse, but I noticed even our hydrangeas at, at the Arboretum. It's been a little bit more work lately.
It has changed.
It's changed.
Hydrangeas didn't used to get eaten up that much, and they are now. They eat some of mine right to the ground.
Yeah, they really are right on them, and they, you know, they reset new leaves, and then they came right back and got them again. So we ended up having to fence some of the new ones.
Repellents work, but you just have to keep applying.
Yeah, it exactly. And if you buy the store-bought, it'll run you money if you do it every week. Because once it rains, you got to do it again.
Yeah, if you're... if they're only feeding on them in the wintertime, then a physical barrier, some kind of netting, burlap or something, would really be the safest thing to do, and you know, give you the most peace of mind.
They're eating mine in the summer.
If they're eating in the summer, then you know, you don't want to have your plant all wrapped up. So that's where the repellents and you know, you can use eggs in water. You can make your own. It's not unreasonable to throw a couple of eggs in a gallon of water, stir it up, and put it on. You don't have to wait for them to go bad.
That's true. Susan, thanks for the call. Let's go to Pierre in Lenox. Pierre, you're on.
Oh, hey there. Hi, Ray. Hi, garden experts. I absolutely love the program, and I want to thank each one of you for doing this for so long. I'm a longtime listener. I think I'm a first-time caller today.
Wow, welcome.
Mike, thank you. My question is, I started harvesting my dahlias and my gladiolas, and they were most prolific this year, especially the dahlias. And the tubers that I'm digging up this morning, they've multiplied incrementally, so I have a large amount. And I store them in peat moss in styrofoam ice chest that I have, and they seem to work well over the winter. I put them in the cool garage. My question is, with the multiplication of all these tubers bulbs, do I break them up or do I leave them as whole when I'm storing them for the winter?
Yeah, if you're going to store them for the winter and they're all in good shape, there's no bad tissue, and you've cleaned them all up and removed the soil, then you would store them as a unit, ideally. Why make any more breaks now? And then in the spring, when you go to plant them out, you could divide them.
Okay.
Exactly what I thought. Thank you, Greg. And thank you also, Greg, for, I love wards. I'm here local. I'm sure the rest of the garden centers are fabulous too, but I benefited from your container recycling program this past summer. And I really thank you. And he has a spot on the garden center where you can pick up and probably leave, or no? Pick up pots.
It's bring some, take some.
Great. I have a little greenhouse, and it just, thank you very much.
Pierre, love you guys. It's your first time on the show. I have to ask you, are you on Greg's payroll? Are you on the payroll?
No, I've known Greg for almost 40 years.
We're not,
friends. But I love Ward's Nursery and those guys. Everybody up there is so helpful and knowledgeable. And
good.
And just having all you guys here today, you know, on your own time. I know you're advertising your businesses, but this is such a service to our community.
Pierre,
I want to thank you.
Pierre. This is public radio. There's no advertising on this. All right. If they might mention it. Anyway, man, thanks for the call. Appreciate it very much. Okay. First timer there. We'll get them trained. Let's go to John in Gilderland Center. John, you're on.
Hi there. Two quick questions, or maybe long questions.
Okay.
I'm in the town of Gilderland Community Garden, and I let a whole bunch of mugwort get into my part of the garden, and I'm trying to figure out, I can't use herbicides because I don't have a credential and the town doesn't allow that. Should I cut them? Should I uproot them? I know with Ailanthus that if you disturb the soil, it makes it grow faster. So, you know, just how to deal with the mugwort. The second question is, I have a fenced off garden at the end of my driveway, and because it was over pebbles and crushed stone, the soil was very poor, and I did 1x6 raised beds. And I'm wondering, I had wilting during the hot part of the day this summer, and I'm wondering if I need to raise the level of these maybe to 12 or 18 inches with more soil to make the plants more resilient next summer. So mugwort control and, you know, balancing balancing the size of the raised bed and
I think you answered your own question with the raised bed.
Yeah. Yep.
There's not enough soil if you've got that kind of underneath it. You just got to
get some
more soil
go
there.
12, 15 inches, 18 inches.
Doesn't have to be 3 feet.
Nope.
It would just be, they would be much happier if they're only growing in the 6 inches you put that other, in other words, what's below them is pretty much hard pan. That's not ideal. If you can loosen that stuff, take them apart and dig up the soil underneath.
The option is to remove some of that.
And then start over, then you probably don't have to raise them.
Yeah. But if you could break up that underpan, that would be good. And then some of that soil that's in that raised bed could now be transferred to the underpan, so you've got like some depth to the in-ground soil. Most raised beds have viable soil underneath them. But I have grown, we had years ago an apartment where my wife and I, it was all subsoil. It was like unusable soil. You couldn't do a garden. So we had to do raised beds, and it worked well. But we had to go, we did like 18 inches.
And then on the mugwort part, I didn't catch the first part. The mugwort is in a garden?
Where was that?
I'm in the community garden over in the town of Gilderland, and I've got like 25 by 30, and I raise vegetables and some flowers. And the mugwort has been coming up inside my part of the garden and on the edge of the public path. So, and I think it got maybe 15% of my area this year. And I pulled some of it and I cut some of it, but I was away a lot and I wasn't able to stay after it every day, every week. So
that's the issue. I mean, you can defeat it if you stay on it, because this is a garden that you can work the soil all the time. You can be in there doing, getting at it, once a week. If you were in there working it back, that would do it. Mowing the edge or trimming the edge to keep it from, getting any height is certainly going to help keep it from creeping in. If you don't want to do any kind of work to the soil you have there, you can try to smother it with cardboard.
Yeah, that's what I would think in that situation.
Since it's a perennial, I personally would go for pulling it as much as you can. And the smothering, especially along the edge, I think would be great.
What is mugwort? Is it like a Harry Potter thing? What is this?
It's actually an herb.
It's an artemisia.
Yeah, artemisia. It's actually used in some traditional medicine.
Uh-huh.
And it's a very aggressive, fairly new invasive plant.
Okay. It's Gardening Today. Dale Isla, Greg Ward, Fred Breglia, Bob Graves. Well, Dale Isla Riggs, the seascape is always great, right?
This, I think so.
NY 1792 is the charts.
I'm with you. That NY 1792 is fantastic.
Okay, that is the type of feedback that I'm looking for to give to the breeder.
That's
it's
meaty
always
and
tricky.
Sweet and,
Yeah.
It's tricky because you pick one and you go, well, is it as ripe as the other one? So I picked the other one.
Yeah.
But I randomly jumped into both, and the NY 87, whatever that's called.
92.
Yeah, 92.
It checks all the boxes.
Did you eat that softball size one?
That was me. I got that one.
Okay, I snuck around it.
All right. Let's go to Henrietta in Orange County. Henrietta, you're on.
Hi. Thanks for putting me on the show. I have wild berry vines. Right now, they're about 8 to 10 feet long. They have periodically invaded all of my flower planting beds. And usually I go around and I just pull them out or they get cut off and they're no problem. But for about 3 years, I had to ignore everything. And this year, they're all over the place. Most of them had no flowers on, so they're just green and in the way. However, as I was walking by one planting bed, I picked 4 cups of red raspberries.
Mm-hmm.
From some of them. So I said, I think they're more important than my flower beds, but I don't know whether to cut them back. I don't know when they decided to grow long enough to produce berries. I don't know whether to cut them back and cut everything else back, because I don't know what the rest of them are, or whether I should leave them and maybe train them up somehow.
All right, Dale Isla.
Yeah, so what time of year did you find the berries? Were they fall or were they during the summer?
During the summer.
Okay, so a summer raspberry. So the ones that had the berries on them this year, those canes you could prune back all the way because they aren't going to do anything next year. What I would do is find a different spot and transplant them in the spring. If they were that good and that prolific, it sounds like something worth keeping. And so I would just find a spot and designate that as being your raspberry
But if
patch.
if they're really thriving in that spot, why move them? I mean, it sounds like the perfect spot.
Yes, that's true. Or move the flowers.
Yeah,
but
you could do that.
Yeah. Yeah. I would keep them. You know, were they good size?
About the size of my thumb.
Okay. Yeah, that's a pretty good size.
They were certainly happy there.
I was properly impressed because I've never, ever, I didn't plant them. I've never seen them before. Oh. They were just there, and I said, this is spectacular. Mm. So those I should just cut back to the ground because the new canes will produce new fruit. Is that what I'm understanding?
So the new canes, the ones this year that did not have any fruit on them, you need to keep because that's what will produce fruit next summer. The ones that had the berries on them themselves are the ones that you need to cut off.
So you're saying okay. they're going to produce fruit on year-old canes.
Correct.
Right.
For a summer raspberry.
For a summer raspberry.
And the canes should be a different color. You should be able to tell the difference between the ones that came up this spring and did not flower and the ones that had wintered and did flower and fruit.
They should have a different look to them. That's
right. The ones that came up this year should still be pretty green and should be more upright. And the ones that fruited should be brown and looking kind of dead at this point.
All right. Henrietta, thank you very much for the call. Delilah Riggs, I had a second NY 1792, and I rarely do this during a show. That is the best strawberry I've ever had.
Really?
Yeah, I'm not kidding around.
Courtney will be excited. I was worried because, to me, I was picking them a little bit light in color.
Yeah. Maybe that's why they're so great.
Could be. You know, Might be.
One of those is a strawberry shortcake all by itself.
And we have been eating strawberry shortcake every night, I must admit.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. All right, let's go to Harriet in Woodstock. The number here, by the way, is 800-348-2551. It's Gardening Today with Bob Graves from the Landis. No, gosh. What the heck is that? You know what? I'm senile now, and I give up. Bob Graves is a co-owner of Fatigan's Nursery. Fred Breglia is director of the Landis Arboretum. Maybe you should get a little summer job over there, Bob.
Hey,
you
know,
that's only the second mistake you've ever made on the radio, though, right? So you're doing good.
I've made plenty of mistakes. We could do a whole couple of shows.
I think that's the second one in the first half hour.
Thank you very much, Bob.
Bob won't
be with us anymore. Greg Ward runs Ward's Nursery in Great Barrington, and Dale Isla Riggs is from the Berry Patch in Steventown. Now to Harriet in Woodstock. Hello, Harriet in Woodstock.
Hello, everybody.
Welcome.
The woman that was just on about the raspberries, I just want to quickly say that my garden was filled with raspberries that I never planted, and they were beautiful berries. They were very tasty, and I had nothing to do with it, and I went out to get them, or some of them, and I found that there wasn't a single one left. Not one. And I suspect a large black furry creature.
Oh, you think a bear got them?
I do.
Or a Bigfoot?
You know, we won't even go there.
Okay, fair enough. So what's on your mind, Harriet?
Well, I have two questions. The first one is about trumpet vine. I love trumpet vines. I planted one, 4 years ago, maybe 5 years ago, and it's always been poorly. It's grown, and it puts out green leaves and a few bunches of beautiful trumpets. But this year, it had a whole bunch of the blooming trumpets, and it was wonderful. And I would like to be able to keep that going, but one of the things that it's doing that I've never seen is it's putting out seed pods. And I want to know what to do with those seed pods, how to treat them.
You can remove them. Mm. You can just leave them there as well. I mean, but removing them is perfectly fine. Cutting back the trumpet vine so that you're removing all the pods is reasonable.
That plant can get a little invasive.
I don't care about that. You have no idea what's invaded here. I'd rather have trumpet vines.
Yep. Okay. Sometimes they take a little time to get going, those trumpet vines.
Do.
So it sounds like it, you know, the last few years you were talking about were probably it starting to get ramped up. And then this year, it really got established. And you know, I suspect that you'll call back in the future and say, that trumpet vine's doing really well.
All right. Because in the future, I would think about watering and fertilizing it too, because this spring was so wet, a lot of things did really well because of that.
All right, Harriet, we only have about a minute before the next break, but I know you have another question, right?
Yeah. I would love it if you could comment on the blight that struck milkweed all over this area, Woodstock. The coal patches of milkweed just had this black, awful stuff. The pods never matured, and it was very sad.
Okay.
I have not heard of that. No,
we're assuming it's going to be fungus because we had so much rain early in the earlier in the year. A lot of things develop fungus problems that don't normally.
Mm. I've seen a lot of milkweed do fine in the Berkshires, certainly, and seeds are blowing all over the place now.
And I know the milkweed, we leave a lot of the wild milkweed at the arboretum purposely for like pollinators and monarchs and stuff. And I plant a lot of the varieties too. And ours has all been perfect this year.
Interesting.
It's been
not affected by any other moisture. I mean, it's been exemplary season for it.
Interesting.
On our end.
Okay.
Well, I tell you what,
it's not near a road at all, is it? Where it could have got sprayed?
Oh no.
Okay.
Okay. Well, we're going to have to leave it there. I'm sorry, Harriet. Thank you for the call. 800-348-2551 is the number. It's gardening. We'll be back. Vox Pop on WAMC. It's Ray Graff with you gardening today with Greg Ward, Dale Isla, Fred Breglia, Bob Graves. Let's tell you what. We have so many emails. Let's try to do a lightning round here on the emails, and then we'll get right back to the phone. So quick answers, please, panel. This one is from Betty in Wilbraham. This is a wonderful show. Well, thank you, Betty. I'm in Western Massachusetts, saith Betty, and I have some butternut squash on the vines. Because of the recent frost, it looks like the plants have perished despite my covering them. Some of the butternuts still have faint green stripes, and the stems are not yet brown. But should I cut them or leave them on the vine a bit longer to further mature? I'm not sure that leaving them will do any good. There you go, Dale Isla.
Yeah, definitely cut them and get them inside in a warm location for a couple weeks to cure them, and that will help them finish off ripening and then let them store well during the fall.
Okay. This is from James. What will happen if I take the top off a 15 to 20 foot arborvitae growing against the house? Will they still grow up or just grow out? Fred.
So if they take the top off, you will push lateral growth, so they will get a little bit wider, but that can be sheared, so you can respond to that kind of regrowth. And arborvitae's, it's certainly something that can be cut back pretty easily like that, so it wouldn't hurt to plant.
All right, Anita writes in, is there anything we can do to stop the proliferation of Japanese silt grass? It's taking over our lawn and the flower beds. Bob.
I'm not sure. Is that a perennial or an annual?
I don't know. Greg, chime in here.
So silt grass is an invasive. I believe it's perennial. If it's in your lawn, you should be able to mow it. It shouldn't be a problem. I mean, you certainly remember. Where it's really an issue now is in pastures, in fields, on the edge of roads and things. Nothing great. I mean, smothering it is the alternative to using herbicides.
With a perennial, a pre-emergent herbicide isn't going to work on it.
No, it would be a contact herbicide. Post-emergent.
While we are on an Asian bent here, this is from Martha in Saratoga. I have a neighbor with a wild lawn whose plants have migrated over my yard. I've been dealing with their Japanese knotweed for quite a few years, systematically poisoning it, and it's getting better. But I cannot control the bishop's weed. It pops up everywhere, and I'm constantly pulling it. Any suggestions?
Bishop's weed is a really hard one. Its persistence pays off. Are you ever going to get rid of it? I'm not quite sure. We've been whittling away at our bishop's weed at the Arboretum. I've been there 28 years. It started before I even got there.
Smothering it and pulling it and
persistence, and you will wear it down. Okay. You will wear it down. And if you really keep on it,
doesn't
get rid
like
of it.
To get mowed. And it
doesn't
and
like
it,
to get mowed.
And if it's
that's
in
true.
an established garden that you do a lot of work in, with persistence, you can weed it out and keep it out of that garden.
And if you're going to smother it, mow it first.
Yep. But if it isn't a lawn and you can mow it, easy to get rid of it that way.
Some things cannot take being mowed.
No, Bishop's weed doesn't like to be mowed.
David writes in, and then we'll go back to the phones. Hopefully we'll get to the email again before the show's over. David says, a friend gave me a potted fig tree. It's about 2 feet tall. It had been in a Brooklyn backyard, but it's now in a pot on the southwest side of my house in Colony. Can I plant it in the ground? What would be the best time to do that?
I wouldn't do it.
Keep it in a pot.
Keep it in a pot.
Let it get some cold weather. Okay. That's fine. It'll take the 30s or 29s, and then bring it inside when it's too cold and kind of hold back watering. The leaves will yellow and drop off.
Okay.
It'll leaf out again in January, February, March. And
I used to put mine in the garage, which was not heated but fairly warm, and it was fine. And then they got too big, and I had to put them in the barn, which was not warm, and I lost them.
Okay. All right, let's go back to our phone lines. It's The Gardening Show with Greg, Dale, Isla, Fred, and Bob. And we'll go to South Berkshire County. It's Adam's turn. Adam, go ahead.
Hi, good afternoon. Thanks for taking my call.
You bet.
How do you recommend handling ground ivy in the lawn? And then I have a question about junipers.
Okay.
With the ground ivy, selective contact killer, something that will kill broadleaf weeds and not grass, it's very difficult to get rid of, and one application of a herbicide is not going to do it. It'll take maybe 3 or 4 over the course of a year, probably, to get control over that.
And at the same time, it's usually it persists because the soil has been compacted or damaged. You know, the area has been damaged in some way, and so renovating that area, so running it over with a light till, maybe an aerator or something, reseeding, pulling at it can actually reduce it quite a bit. And once you get the grass back in place, it competes really well with it.
A core cultivator that takes out plugs would work well for that too, because you can overseed it and the seed grows in the plug. And basically you're trying to get the grass to outcompete the ground ivy.
Mm. But that's a renovation job. Yeah. That's going to take some work as well.
All right, Adam.
Okay. Juniper question is, last year, a longstanding juniper, 35, 40 years old, turned brown and seemed to, pretty much die out, and I've cut it back. I'm just curious what would cause that to happen. One recommendation to me was that it could be windburn on it, not really sure.
No, it'd most likely be a blight.
Pardon?
It would most likely be a blight, fungal issue. Then sometimes older ones kind of get that. They get a fungal pathogen. It blights out the foliage. And
I've had a real problem with established junipers with voles. Voles love juniper.
Girdling them? Girdling
eating
branches.
The roots.
Oh, eating roots.
Yeah, a real, big things that you wouldn't think could die.
Wow, big guys.
Voles got them.
So this is a spreading juniper, something that sort of covers a lot of width and it's not really upright, or is it a tree-form juniper?
It's a hanging juniper, like a hanging juniper over a stone wall.
Yeah.
Like a crawler. Yeah,
So voles are probably the most likely issue. They moved into the stone wall. Yeah, they really love those. And all winter long, they needed something to eat, and the roots of the juniper were just right.
Okay. Adam, thanks a lot. We'll quickly go to Williamstown. And Morgan, you're on.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. I really appreciate this show. You guys are fantastic. I was calling in response to the earlier caller who was having lawn renovation issues and was wondering what to do this time of year. I have found actually sowing cereal rye or winter rye as a nurse crop for whatever lawn grasses I'm going to put in. That works pretty well. Because it's an annual, you can mow it in the spring. It germinates under and grows in cold temperatures. And then in the spring, things like crabgrass and other competitive plants are prevented from really getting started, whereas the lawn grasses will germinate and take off. And of course, again, the rye can be mowed. And I I've worked in the soil health realm for a number of years, and I couldn't agree more about the soil health aspects of that were covered already. And this is another thing that the cereal rye will help with in terms of putting photosynthates into the soil and helping get everything established for a new lawn to get going in the spring.
There's also
again, thanks great. So much for everything.
You got it. You guys want to comment on this very
quickly? There's been a lot of research done by Cooperative Extension in New York about also using perennial rye, which is a lawn grass seeded at this time of year because it comes up quick. A lot of times that's used in this sort of renovation type project.
Right, because it's fast.
It's fast.
Fast sprout. Yeah, aggressive.
Going. Yeah.
Yep. And then that will come back, too.
I think so.
You know?
Delilah, the little bitty pygmy albino strawberries are weird.
Yes. I would agree.
I liked it.
You liked it? It had almost a sour vibe going on.
A bit tart to it.
Tart, they definitely don't taste sweet.
I think they'd be good on a cake, honestly.
I think they're more for an ornamental. They've got really dark green leaves.
Why are you feeding
leaves?
Me ornamentals? I mean, you know, I don't know. I think
you put that on the right color cheesecake and that might
okay. There you something go. Sweet underneath. Yeah. It might work.
A little bit of a tart.
Chocolate cheesecake.
Fruit salad as a color change.
Yeah, you know, maybe.
Color, contrast.
Yeah. I like the texture and the sort of vibe of the whole thing, but it's got a little sour edge to it. It's okay. It's all right. A question here about raspberries very quickly here before we get back to the phones. Jan writes, I have every berry raspberries, which have two crops, summer and in the fall. A friend gave me some raspberries, which I planted with my raspberries, not thinking to ask if they were everberry. I found out later they were not everberry. This year I did not have any raspberries. What could this problem be planting summer raspberries with everberry?
Well, summer raspberries produce fruit on the second year of growth. So they have to grow 1 year, and then it's the side branches that come out the second year that produce the fruit. So if they were new this year, that's why, because they haven't had their second year of growth yet.
You know, these albino strawberries, I don't know how many you get, but it would probably make a great jam. If you add just a little bit of sweetener to it, a little sugar, it would probably have a really good sour sweet taste to it. Yeah?
Yeah.
No, or am I wrong?
I'd rather have jam out of these 1792s.
Oh, my God. 1792s are the best.
What about in some gin?
Now you have my attention. Finally, Greg Ward has said something I can understand. That's yes. Yes. Raj in Schenectady. Raj, you're on.
Yes. Thank you for taking my call.
You got it.
I have a question about my lawn. Actually, two questions.
Lawn, okay.
One is, my lawn used to be good, but for the past two seasons, it's been really bad. I see a lot of weeds. I am not sure how to control it. That's my first point.
Well, it's really hard to know without more information. As to what's going on, quality of the soil, what the pH is, what the watering has been, what the fertilizing has been.
So we've had 2 years, I mean, we've had other years, but 2 years of some significant drought. Like the year before, 2024, it started in July and persisted right till the end of fall. And that is really stressful to the lawn. And that allows other things to grow in there or for bare spots to show up. And so
I've been watering the lawn pretty much every day regularly for the past 2 years.
Okay, that's a problem too.
Watering was not an issue.
Don't water it every day because you're gonna cause all kinds of problems doing that.
Ah.
You're gonna change the pH, you're gonna have fungus problems. Maybe 3 times a week, but certainly not every day.
And a good long time when you do.
A good long soak,
but not every day.
Lawn,
you know, some kind of overseeding, some kind of soil prep, or, you know, spreading some compost, renovating the soil before you seed for next year is what we've been mentioning these last few callers.
The fellas at Cornell who are very involved in turf grass for golf courses recommend that you reseed with a newer varieties of seed.
Change
because seeds that are 10 years or 20 years ago aren't as good.
All right, Roger, we only have another minute here for your second question, so go ahead.
My second question is, in one area of my lawn, I see a lot of anthills.
Anthills. Yeah, I got that too.
Yep.
Probably sandy.
Sandy, and maybe sandy? There's a little old wood in there they like to
They like the
on.
Old wood. So yep. What do you do? What does Raj do? We got to get out of this call.
Generally, I just disturb them if you really have to get them out. But I have a dowser friend of mine that tells me anthills like that is a sign of good energy.
Really?
So it could be some good energy in his yard.
Good energy, bad ants. It's
if you put insecticide on that, you're going to have to keep doing it and doing it and doing it. You don't get rid of it.
Can he amend the soil?
They're not going to go away, really. I would enjoy them as much as possible.
Okay.
I don't know, Raj. I don't enjoy ants very much. Thank you very much for the call. Very quickly, let's go to Bob in Conesville, who's been waiting quite a while. Bob, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Go ahead. You have about a minute.
Ray, I have to commend you on your box pops and the amount of knowledge you have on all these different subjects. My question for the garden experts is on my lawn, I have two white pine trees, which loses a lot of leaves, a lot of needles, and that area of the lawn just doesn't want to grow. And I'm wondering, I try to get rid of them and rake them and whatnot, but should I put lime in that area, and when should I do it if I put lime on it?
Well, the first question is it shady underneath big pine trees? If it's shady, you're not going to grow grass no matter what you do. But
it's not shady. This is they blow onto the lawn next to the trees.
Before you do lime, get a soil test because sometimes it's the opposite of what you think.
Yeah.
They don't necessarily make it acid. They like it acid, but they don't necessarily make it acid.
Uh-huh. And they can tolerate a higher pH than you would think. I would say that picking up the needles is the best thing you can do. And then, you know, we've been talking about how the lawns have been stressed the last few years, so there's probably a moisture issue.
Yeah, white pines, a lot of people think acidic, but you're right. They're one of the most adaptable of all the pines. That's... They can take it a little more wet than a lot of the other pine species. They can take it a little bit more, adjusting different pHs from other pine trees. So more adaptable white pine.
Does that work for you, Bob?
Yes, one other quick question. I have an area of my lawn which I'd like to grow wildflowers in. Can I do that just by scattering wildflower seeds in that area? Will that do it, or do I have to till and
In my experience, unless you prepare that really well and get bare ground, you're not going to have a lot of success. The wildflowers do not compete well with grass.
They like to have it more of a sort of like a bare ground. Worked. And then I will also add that a lot of times these wildflower mixes have all these different types of wildflowers. And when you throw them out, the first year they come up with all kinds of stuff. But then the following years, one or two varieties, three varieties will dominate. So even though you got like 15 varieties in that mix, you may only, after two or three years of it, just be aware that you may end up with like three varieties.
All right, Bob, go ahead, Greg.
Well,
very quickly.
You can order native wildflower mixes for the Northeast or, you know, for New York State, et cetera. If you look online, they do exist. But as everyone said, you want the ground to be pretty open so the plants that were there to be really beat up and kind of scabbed before you seed.
All right, Bob, we're going to have to leave it there. Thank you for the call. Fred Breglia, how do people find out the Landis Arboretum stuff?
Yep, so we're located at 174 Lape Road in Esperance, New York, and our website is landisarboretum.org.
Delilah Riggs, The Berry Patch.
TheBerryPatch.net.
And Greg Ward, Ward's Nursery.
Yeah, 600 South Main Street, Great Barrington, Massachusetts, or wardsnursery.com.
Bob Graves, I don't need information on the Landis. Just tell me about Fadigan's.
Fadigan's, 2.5 miles west of the Northway at 1140 Troy Schenectady Road at fadigan's.com.
Well, thank you all for being here. We will see you again very soon. Support comes from California Closets, Albany, showroom on Route 7, Latham, working to help clients organize their home this fall with custom built-ins, garages, mudrooms, and more. CaliforniaClosets.com. The Albany Pine Bush Discovery Center presenting October programs featuring buck moths, carefully said, bird banding, observation, full moon, and autumn foliage walks, albanypinebush.org. And ArtSpark, Saratoga Springs, New York, providing artists and arts nonprofits with digital marketing services, web design consultations, and more, artspark.com. Thanks again to our engineer, Mike Bowen. Susie Checkeye screened the calls. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow on Food Friday, it's a cookbook show, kind of a conceptual thing with Haley Whalen and Ali Stafford. We'll see you at 2:00.